630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.
McDavid centers. One-timer score! Oscar Klefbom, and Edmonton strikes again in overtime. This time, it's Klefbom.
He'll swing it out to the outside, and it is to the end zone. Touchdown, Eskimos. Darrell Walker with the touchdown, and the Eskimos take the lead with less than a minute to go.
Edmonton's home for breaking news on your favorite teams. This is Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins on the voice of your Edmonton Oilers and Eskimos, 630 CHED.
Hey, thanks a lot for tuning in tonight. Looking out over the field, the brick field at Commonwealth Stadium. Heck, there's going to be a game here on May 27th, but tonight the focus, the CFL draft. First overall pick coming up right away. We'll keep you updated as we move along. Of course, our big focus will be the Eskimos, who are selecting 10th overall. Hockey tonight, Washington and Pittsburgh early in the second period. The Capitals are on a power play. There is no score. The Toronto Blue Jays playing the first half of a doubleheader in Cleveland. Well, they just won the first game of the doubleheader in 11 innings, 13-11 over Cleveland. So now they'll regroup and get ready for the second game. It was 9-9 going to extras. The Blue Jays got four in the top of the 11th, and Cleveland came back with two in the bottom of the 11th, so they combined for 24 runs and 32 hits in that game. Josh Donaldson returned to the Blue Jays lineup. He hit a home run. He went 3-for-7 with three RBIs and three runs. So he makes an impact in his first game since April 10th. The Raptors are on the court right now. And Jack Michaels is moving closer to winning a dinner courtesy of me at Northern Chicken, because we have bet on this series. Cleveland won game one in overtime, didn't lead until the very end of the game, and they have pulled away in the third quarter here, and now early in the fourth lead the Raptors 105-87. There's your scoreboard update. Reed Wilkins with you at Commonwealth Stadium, and I'm pleased to be joined by Eskimos long snapper Ryan King. Ryan, how's life?
Life's good. It's been a long offseason coming off of an injury, but we're football weather's turned in the city finally. We can get rid of winter now, and snow's all melted at Commonwealth, and it's good to be back out running around and just getting close to season.
Well, I appreciate you stopping by and staying a little later, because I know you're doing a lot of training, obviously, and coming back from the injury. And I want to talk to you about your draft day experience, but I think the big story for you is the injury. We were just talking off air, and I'd actually forgotten how much time you missed. I mean, you got hurt relatively early in the season, and you were stuck being a spectator and a guy on recovery for most of the year.
Yeah, it was a tough injury to go through, especially when we did. It was game seven. We started off 7-0, so we were on that good little winning run there, and everything seemed to be running smooth. Season off to a good start, after the first quarter, and then ended up having to go in to kick a ball for Sean White. I was the backup kicker at the time, and ran down and planted, and knee gave out, and yeah, blew my ACL up, and had to get surgery a month later. And like you said, it was a tough time getting just sat down. You know, you're out of the locker room immediately. You're on the IR. Yeah, you're about to get into surgery. Now it's surgery prep. It's not week-to-week prep. It's not game prep. It's a totally different mindset, and you know, it really does kind of stop everything you're doing, and it stops really quickly when things are usually going quick in season. So it's that was kind of a shock, but I'm just real grateful that I got such good physio teams looking after me. We're ahead of schedule, plan to be back for week one this year, things are moving forward every week, every month with the knee, and it's been a tough off season, but it's been it's very rewarding now for sure.
So how long was it until you were able to kind of start moving around and feeling like an athlete again after going through a major knee injury and surgery?
You know, and these are things that per surgery basis, it depends on the athlete, you know, how your knee is before, how bad you hurt it. And as athletes, you get surgery so quick, so there's still swelling in your knee, and there's a lot of things that doctors don't want to see, so they have to kind of go in and do it for timeline purposes. I was told, you know, you might be able to walk out of surgery, you know, if things go well, it's pretty smooth. I was a mess after surgery. I was definitely not walking out of surgery. I was getting wheelchaired out, and it was a tough first month at home. You know, for about 2-3 weeks, you're pinned up on the couch, and you literally can't move at all. So that was kind of tough to go through. Thankful for, you know, family and friends and stuff coming by all that time in those moments. But and then it's just a slow and steady learn to walk again, learn to sit down, stand up, learn to move around, twist, turn. You have to really teach your entire knee how to move again. So it's a long journey. It's a long process, but and there's a lot of ups and downs during it. But you're really grateful for your recovery and all the people around you in those moments when you get hurt in a season like that. Could be a career ender, you know, and it has been for other people. And you know, there's a point after surgery, you got to make that decision that you're going to go every day give it your all. So I haven't missed a single day of physio, even on trips that I went on. All my physio gear was with me. And
good.
I feel like I said, we're on track, and I'm going to be real proud to be running on that field game one.
Well, that's good to hear. And look, the reality is there's always guys looking to take your job. And if you can't do your job because of injury, who knows? As much as they, you know, a lot of coaches will say, well, you can never lose your job because of an injury. The bottom line is that's not true. It happens all the time, right? So you're sitting there, somebody else is doing your job, and who knows what his contract could be or age could be and how that could affect you.
Yeah, I'm a big believer. This is seven seasons now. You know, I've been through, we've drafted snappers, we've signed snappers, I've had to compete in training camps, I've had training camps where I've had no one in there, and that's just part of the game. That's what you love about football at a professional level. There's always competition. You always got to be, you know, working out every day, trying to improve yourself, if it's in diet, if it's sleeping, if it's recovery. As you get older, your everything changes too, so you got to be willing to kind of adjust and adapt your schedules and everything as you get older, you know, and especially coming off of an injury. But I love competition. I love going to a training camp, you know, winning a job out. And I really do believe that I've won it every year I've come into camp. And it's been great to meet some guys like Mike Benson, Jorgen Huss, two guys that were in Edmonton and now are starting snappers in other teams. So we have a good little community. We all kind of stay together. We all talk in the offseason. I just had Chad Rempel from Winnipeg drive up to Edmonton for the last week just to snap.
Oh, nice.
And get working for the whole week. So we kind of stay together. And, you just got to kind of keep quiet all the noise around you and just keep doing what you're doing, believe in what you're doing, and things all work out the way they should.
Rempel's a great interview too, as you are. Like, when you guys are retired, you could do a talk show, like maybe a podcast called The Snap Show.
The Snap Show. I like that. Actually, I'll make sure I tag him in this and talk about that.
Then you could have me as a guest.
Yeah. No, that'd be great. We'll bring you on. You'll be one of our first ones on. You started The Snap Show. I'm going to remember that, actually. That's great.
Eskimos long snapper Ryan King joining us on Inside Sports. Give fans a sense of the rule change in terms of what the rushers can do as compared to maybe what they were used to allowed to do when you're, you know, looking back through your legs snapping. Yep. Because it's a little safer for you now in that part, isn't it? I hope that anyway that's what they wanted to do.
Yeah, you know, the game has gone slowly gone offensive as the years have gone since I've been here. And that's normal, you know, evolution of the game as well, too. Fans want touchdowns, fans want to go. So I agree with all that kind of stuff. And the idea behind that was A, you know, for safety reasons, you know, but also to give the returner, kind of equal amount of space and open field to make a dynamic play. And that's a big play if you can score and move position on special teams at that time. So, I think the rule change was the right move.
So can a guy can't line up directly across from you when you're snapping on a punt?
Well, on the rule book, it might say something like that, but I think it's penciled in and some of the letters are erased in there.
Sometimes getting drilled.
Oh man, I can snap the ball and I'm on my back real quick.
Okay.
Especially on field goals, it's you know, you get the big Elmondo Sewells lining up in front of you. Like, you know, there's no stopping him once you move that ball. So it's the rule states I have to get my head up as fast as I can in a safe manner to protect myself, which okay. basically is the same equivalent time that a D lineman can just bull rush off the ball and hit me pretty much. So
okay, and they're obviously not going to wait. Like, oh, hey, Ryan, are you ready to block me out? Okay, and here I come. Yeah.
No, but you know, our systems and our schemes we run on teams. I can kind of pick and choose who I'm blocking. You know, we can, you know, fake certain things and block other people. So me and Calvin have been, you know, blocking the A-gaps basically for 7 years now together. So we got a good understanding of who I should take, who I shouldn't. There's always ways to work around it, but it's I wouldn't say it's safer out there, but you know, it's as safe as it could be, and that's all you can kind of ask for. We're playing professional football, and you know, I want to hit people, and I expect people to want to hit me as well too.
Right, but you have one of those jobs, and we've touched on this before. You have, like, you don't have the headline grabbing job, right? I mean, you got the job. You're, you know, as I said, you're looking when you're on the field. You're looking upside down when you're actually doing your job. And it's the type of job that a lot of times no one notices unless you snail, and I don't know, if I don't think you missed one last year, but unless you sail a staff over someone's head, no one mentions the long staffer.
One error in 7 years, and that was...
That's it. You still remember the only one.
Yeah, it was in Calgary. It was a Labor Day game, and Burke Dales was the punter, and the ball came in. It was just super slick. That was when they rotated the football, so like the ref could drop a ball, and it could be a brand-new waxed ball, or it could be a thrown-out ball. You know, you never know, so you have to be adjusting to that, and I was a young rookie, first-year kid, and I sent just a low heater right at Burke Dales' toes, and he kind of muffed it and got hit, and that's the one he broke his foot on. So that, you know, I injured, I felt horrible, you know, I felt it was all my fault, but that's just, you know, that's again the sad reality of the position, that, you know, when you screw up, it can be really bad, because there's a lot of angles that put you know, kickers in real bad positions if there's any errors in that. It's kind of, you know, from that moment on, I kind of dedicated myself to never have an error again, and I can happily say that I have it in, you know, 6.5 seasons from then. So that's part of the job, though, and I enjoy that part of the job, is the pressure of that position and that role. And that's, to me, what gives me all my credit. You know, I don't need to be headline. I don't want to be any of that. But knowing that I had a perfect game, we got all of our kicks off, we hit a game winner.
Right.
You know, if I can go make a tackle, maybe get a forced fumble or something like that, that's big for me. So that's all I'm looking to do.
The Hamilton Tiger Cats have taken wide receiver Mark Chapman first overall out of Central Michigan. Offensive lineman Trey Rutherford out of Connecticut goes second to Montreal. The Eskimos will pick 10th. Long snapper Ryan King is with us. 38th overall pick in 2012. We're going to get his draft day story when we get back. Inside Sports on 630 Chet.
This is Mike Riley from your Edmonton Eskimos, and you're listening to Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins on 630 Chet.
Oh, there, you've heard of that guy, right?
Yeah, Mike Riley, the man, the legend.
Well, I don't think the MOP is going to go to his head. I don't think you guys have anything to worry about.
No, I don't think so. Mike's a great teammate. It's been awesome to kind of see him evolve over his years and grow into the position and be MOP. Super proud of him winning that, well-deserved. And, you know, I've seen this coming for a lot of years playing with Mike, and he's a true leader in there, and it's pretty cool to play for him.
I'm Reed Wilkins. That's Ryan King, long snapper for the Edmonton Eskimos. Fifth round pick, 38th overall in 2012 out of St. Mary's. So you went through this draft day experience, but I think before we get to that, your whole draft year experience was unique and perhaps not really one you would wish on other people. What happened?
No. So my draft year ended up being the year that they implemented a new eligibility rule for CIS. At the time, it was called CIS. And it was the seven-year rule. So that was the whole problem they had with the junior players playing for 5 years, going to CIS, playing for 5 years. 2011 Vanier Cup, I think, or... the Vanier Cup, St. Mary's, Manitoba. I think the average age was, you know, 28 years old or something. So I get the rule change needed to happen, but it unfortunately happened on my fourth year of eligibility, which was my draft year. So I came off of my best year, setting a school record at my school, stayed there all off season to train, rolled into training camp, and the league showed up and said, we have to put this new rule in, and unfortunately you played 4 years of Edmonton Wildcats, junior football. You already played played your 3 years of eligibility in CIS, and so you're now ineligible to play this season. So it was in training camp when I found that out.
Sorry, and this was September of 2011, basically, August of 2011, because then you were drafted in May of 2012.
Yeah, so... So I had, obviously a little meltdown for a couple of days, and then my coach brought me in, and, I was a defensive captain of the team, middle linebacker, and brought me in to get on the coaching roster. So he signed me up, coached. I was the front seven coordinator for the year. It was a real cool experience to go through. I was running meetings. I was the linebacker that backed me up was now my go-to guy. I was coaching him, sending him on blitzes. And so I learned a lot about the game.
But now there's no game film on you for the year, the most recent year where you're going to be picked.
So and I came off of a great year, so I had to find a way to be creative and to still get my name out there. So coaching was one of them. Stayed in there, made a point of giving it my all and invested a lot of time in that year coaching. And then the second semester of St. Mary's, I actually dropped out of all my classes, took my student loan money that I had for that semester, flew down to San Diego, where I had a facility that I lined up, and a Mitch Palmer, who was a 15-year NFL long snapper.
Yeah.
So I went down there for 3 months, lived in a hotel, trained at a facility, worked with the long snapper. At the time, Taylor Inglis was coming into retirement, which I'm very good friends with, and we talked about the whole kind of transition possibility. And he sent his CFL balls down to San Diego for me to use those to transition from the NFL balls. And I was talking kind of to some teams along that time. And I thought I was kind of crazy, to be honest, doing it, but I knew I had to do something just to show that I was still kind of in it to win it, and I was still in great shape, and I was actually even healthier because I had time to, give my body some break. But, so then I came back from San Diego. The next day, Taylor Inglis picked me up. We drove into the stadium, and I had my workout with Eric Tillman, Kavis Reed, and Ed Hervey, and that was the start of the whole process of getting drafted. So it was... It was a very unique situation that I went through getting in my draft year, but it's something that I do. I'm very glad it happened. It kind of transitioned me from being a linebacker to another position. I realized, this is an opportunity I can learn to actually snap.
Right.
I was a backup snapper forever. I used to tee off on snappers all the time. Like, that was like my job.
So
on
you
my
know,
return,
like
you
I was know? Asking you about before. Yeah.
You know, which even helps me now because I see linebackers when they're
you
looking
know
at
who's
me.
Coming, yeah.
You know, if he ain't looking at me, he's coming for me. So, I've learned a lot of these things from my own doings out there. But. So it slowed me down. It opened me up to another position, and 7 years later in a Grey Cup, and I absolutely love what I'm doing, and I love being a part of the locker rooms, it was a cool experience to go through. Now looking back at it, at the time it was tough to go through, but those are just all speed bumps that a lot of guys getting drafted today. There's gonna be a lot of unique stories, maybe not like mine, but very similar.
All right, so your draft day in 2012, as I mentioned, you went 38th overall, fifth round of the Eskimos. What was that day like for you? I mean, obviously you'd had the workouts, so you knew you were getting looked at. There was a pretty good chance, but, every athlete, I'm sure there's that what if. So what was the day like?
Yeah, it was, I was nervous that day, just waking up and just knowing that, I just basically dropped out of a semester of school, spent all my money. If this doesn't work today, then, mom and dad might be pretty upset at me, but I knew I put the hard work, and I knew I went through the right channels to get the right workouts and to talk to the right people. And I got a great group of people in my corner, that really helped out along the way to set this all up. And especially Taylor Inglis, he retired and basically hand gave me his position, and was there along the whole journey, was there the one talking to coaches and saying, hey, Kinger's down in San Diego, I'm sending my footballs, if this works out, I'm going to transition out. And so it was just like almost a dream story. But going back to draft day, I went to a little sports bar in Sherwood Park, and just wanted it low-key, had my two best friends, my dad, my mom, and my two brothers, and that was it. Because it was just kind of, we sat at the back, played some golf, and obviously I knew I wasn't going on TV or anything like that, because I was going way down on the list, but I sat there refreshing the computer at the sports bar, and sure enough, everything... Actually, there was a trade of picks in like the fourth and fifth round, and so I thought the fourth pick was mine because I was like, this is my pick, and it wasn't me. So I was what's going on? And sure enough, the fifth was mine. So it was a cool moment. My dad, my family's super excited. It's looking back at it now, it's one of those things that you're most happy for the people that are in your corner. All the coaches and players that you've touched from minor football on, you know, they all have a piece of what you've just accomplished. And that was what's most cool for me, because I think to be a successful athlete, you got to kind of always be given away instead of taken. And that was kind of how I felt at that moment. And that's how I kind of still continue to play, is try to give back as much as I can. And, you know, even when I get hurt and they bring snappers in, I'm the first one there coaching them up, watching film with them, and just trying to get, you know, the position and the people in this league better. And I think today is an exciting day for not only the draft class, but, you know, there's not only going to be a lot of great players that get drafted today, but there's going to be a couple exceptional ones. So it'll be cool to find out.
And how about this? The U of A's Mark Cordy has gone fourth overall to the Ottawa Red Blacks, so even higher than he was expected to go. So good for Mark. We've had him on the show in the past few weeks as well. So that's awesome for the U of A program. You mentioned about giving back as well. Ryan King from the Eskimos joining us. We're live at Commonwealth Stadium for CFL Draft and other discussion. We're into the last 90 seconds before the news. But where are you going as soon as we're done?
Going to coach up my kids. Me and Calvin McCarty, my little brother, our King McCarty camps have been doing great for the last 5 years now. We've been growing, running camps and going to schools and teams and training kids and just trying to stay as busy as we can in the offseason, getting out minor football. It's where I started playing football, so it's, for me, a big focus is to go give back to the kids. So it's I'm looking forward to getting out of here and driving over. I got the West End Raiders today over at St. Effect's Athletic Field over there. So the kids love me. I love the kids. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Right on. Brian, thanks a lot for dropping by. I know it's a busy day for you with the training, and you've battled back hard from the knee injury. Thanks for sharing those stories, and thanks for sharing your draft year and draft day experiences. Obviously, still fond memories for even back 6 years ago. And all the, I know obviously we'll talk again, but all the best this season coming up.
Thanks a lot.
Inside Sports on 630 CHED.
For breaking news and expert opinion. Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins on 630 CHED.
Niskanen's ticket, the Penguins turn back into the play. Simone in front, shooting the puck, it's in! The Penguins have scored. Simone shot it. He may have hit somebody in front. Gensel may have touched that puck. And the Penguins have taken a 1-0 lead. Holy cheese and crackers. The Penguins get the first goal in this game.
There's Mike Lang with the call from the Penguins Radio Network. It was Gensel's ninth of the playoffs. Since then, TJ Oshie has scored his fourth for the Capitals. There are two teams in a 1-1 tie. 6 minutes left in the second period. Caps lead the series 2-1. Predators and Jets later on, 7:30 Mountain Time face-off. Winnipeg up 2-1 in that series. The Blue Jays won the first half of a doubleheader, 13-11 over Cleveland in 11 innings. And speaking of Cleveland and Toronto, the Cavaliers up 2-0 now on the Raptors, just stormed past them in the third quarter and won game 2, 128-110. The Oil Kings selected Dylan Gunther first overall in the WHL draft today. Oil Kings GM Randy Hanch will join us later on Inside Sports Tonight in about an hour. And we you mentioned there before the break, Mark Cordy from the University of Alberta. Offensive lineman goes fourth overall in the CFL draft to the Ottawa Red Blacks. Receiver Mark Chapman out of Central Michigan goes first overall to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Reed Wilkins live at Commonwealth Stadium. Eskimos play-by-play voice Morley Scott joining me.
Good evening, Morley. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming down.
Pleasure to be here. It's funny. What the basketball game tonight, Cleveland over Toronto, is becoming like the hockey situation with Pittsburgh over Washington.
Well, maybe not this year.
That's true. Maybe they're turning the corner this year.
I got a Northern Chicken dinner.
I heard, yes.
Met with Jack Michaels on the basketball series. Not going well
that
for me.
That was an old-fashioned butt-kicking today. I mean, the Raptors were up by 11 in the second quarter.
Yeah, they were looking really good in the second quarter. Even at halftime, they were still ahead. By the way, some guests on the show get gift certificates to Northern Chicken, bringing down south comfort food to Edmonton with Southern Classics and other tasty treats. Salivate over the menu at northchickenyeg.com. Some guests, Marley, not all.
Okay. Always works out that way.
You're a coworker.
You always read that before I come on and then tell me I don't get one.
Well,
Man.
That's because I always think, like, who doesn't need chicken? Morally.
That's true. I don't need much. I don't need anything. I already had my free meal next door, courtesy of the Eskimos, and I thanked them for that.
That's true. We did get a little bit of pasta here from Boston Pizza. So Washington and Pittsburgh going at it. You know, on a really serious note, though, Morley, obviously the Oilers, the Edmonton hockey community, lost somebody, Brian Ross, earlier this week that you got to know pretty well during your years covering the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Roscoe is he is a unique guy. He was a special guy. I was lucky enough, I got to sit beside him on the bus for a few years. So we talked a lot. We had a lot of chuckles. Yeah, the thing that I always remember about Brian is that smile. Just he was always smiling and cracking jokes. And it's been touched on a little bit by people who talked about him. The thing that I will remember most about Brian is his ability or his want to do anything to help out. I mean, he had his job. I mean, and here's a guy who worked his way up. He started with the stores that the Oilers ran, right? The merchandise stores, and he started working there, then managed them, and then moved up into the hockey department. But he would do anything. I mean, if the bags had to be moved off the truck into the dressing room, he'd help the trainers do that. If they needed something at the drugstore on the road, he'd get in a cab and go get it. He would do whatever the team needed him to do. He was a perfect team guy. He was a guy who was just so dedicated to the Oilers organization and willing to do whatever it took to those little things behind the scenes that help teams be successful and help teams win. A good human being, a great guy. I'll miss him for sure. I haven't seen him for a while. We used to live in the same neighborhood, and it kind of worked out every 2 weeks we'd see each other at Safeway, and we'd end up standing in the aisle at Safeway or in the parking lot talking for, you know, 15 or 20 minutes. But I got to spend a lot of time with him when I was doing other games, and really enjoyed being around Brian.
Yeah, I didn't get to know him that well, being, I guess, relatively newer to the Oilers beat as compared to some other media guys. But very well respected. And when I was around him, I always was struck by his positive energy and his attitude. And he battled cancer really hard over the last few years. And you mentioned his willingness to do anything. That includes even let guys take 100 mile per hour slap shots at him.
That is true.
He'd jump in. And
his claim to fame in that department, as he was the Oilers practice goalie, was one time in Chicago, a goaltender was injured the night before. I can't remember the personnel-wise, but another goalie was being called up. So he was traveling all day, but his plane didn't land till like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So by the time he got his luggage and everything and got to the rink, it was going to be too late for the warm-up. So Brian got to take the warm-up in Chicago at the United Center one night. And he came out, and he had a jersey on. They had his name on the back of it, and he stood in there and he took shots in the pregame warm-up and then went back in the dressing room and did the video. That's one thing about Brian, too. He never saw many games because he was always in the bowels of whatever arena we were in, watching the game on video and doing the video of the game and cutting up video, and he'd get messages from the coaches, I want to see that at the intermission, I want to see that at the intermission. So he was at every game, but he never got to see many of them other than watching them on the monitor.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing those memories, Brian Ross. He'll be missed.
Absolutely.
To his family and his
soul. You know somebody special when people just, you got one name for him, right? Roscoe. Everybody knows who Roscoe is in the organization. You talk to the people who've been around the Oilers organization for a lot of years, and you just say Roscoe, and they know who you're talking about.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Marley. Great stuff for sure about Brian Ross. So we're here at Commonwealth Stadium. We got the CFL draft underway, and this is always an interesting night for me because you have players picked from all over. These guys are, what are they? They're not Canadians anymore. What are they? Nationals.
Oh,
they're nationals.
Nationals.
Right. But they can play in Canada. They can play in the States. But they're Canadian players. So you're not drafting any American guys. Those guys all get signed. And this is a fun night for me. Great to see Mark Cordier of the U of A get picked high, because it was more, it seemed like to me there was more anticipation he might go 6, 7, 8. He goes 4 offensive linemen, and he's been doing really well. The thing about tonight is, talking to Ryan King, and he referenced Calvin McCarty, those are two guys taken, in the second half of the draft that have had, especially McCarty, and, King's been around since 2012. I mean, you get some important guys on the team. Maybe they're not names above the title, like Mike Riley's going to be, but you get some pretty important Canadian players.
And a lot of times in this draft, you don't where you're drafted doesn't necessarily affect what you end up doing on the team. And like you pointed out, Calvin McCarty was a late round pick. Even just going back to last year, and lots has to play out, obviously, with these two guys. But I mean, Nate Behar, drafted in the first round by the Eskimos, tremendous upside, but didn't come to training camp because he had a contract dispute, ended up playing, I think, two snaps on offense,
right,
but was on special teams for the 12 games he played. Not really an impact player last year. And then taken in the fifth round was Kwaku Boateng, who his stock dropped for whatever reason. He could have been a late first rounder, early second rounder, didn't go to the fifth. He ends up being the Eskimos nominee for Rookie of the Year. He had four sacks, and he's basically this year kind of forcing the Eskimos to flip the ratio on the defensive line. They were All-American last year. This year, they're making plans for possibly him being a starter this year. So it really doesn't matter. And the key phrase I've heard that I've really liked about draft day doesn't matter. Training camp matters.
Right.
Right? It doesn't matter where you get drafted on draft day. It's important. It's cool. It's fun. But you still got to go to training camp and get a job.
Well, it's interesting, too, with, I mean, Canada's becoming a better sports country overall. We're not just producing hockey players, yep, and curlers and figure skaters anymore, like would have been the majority.
They're all still good.
They're all still really good.
Yeah.
But I mean, the debate sometimes, depending on the year, is that guy going to go to the NFL? I mean, Austin Pastor was a big old lineman that I can't remember if the Eskimos drafted for him or traded for him. Was that part of the Ray deal?
Part of the Ricky Ray trade. The pick they got for Ray, they traded and got that pick. Anyway, okay. It was kind of convoluted. But yeah, and we haven't seen him.
He's never been here.
I mean, Stephen Charles, defensive lineman. They drafted him. The last time they didn't have a first-round pick, they drafted him. I think it was the first pick in the second round as well, just like this year. And haven't seen him. Last year, they drafted Justin Senior, Tavon Smith. Haven't seen them yet. And that's the thing. I think if there's any fault, and the Eskimos have produced some pretty good players via the draft the last handful of years, especially last year was a knockout year in the draft, but maybe the knock on the Eskimos the last few years is they're picking players that are too good,
right?
Because they're going to the NFL, and you anticipate they'll go to mini camp, maybe get an invite, but they'll be back here soon. But they're not coming back soon. Arjun Kolhoun was in that boat for a while. They drafted him in the second round a couple of years ago. He spent a year in the NFL before he signed with the Eskimos last year. So, there's more to it than just talent in a CFL draft, because you got to go by positional need and you have to go by who you think is going to be impactful. And I saw a tweet, I think it was Section O had a great tweet today, and I'll paraphrase a little bit. He said, stay away from guys who have medical or getting medical degrees or lawyers, because they're the guys who leave after 4 years because they can make more money,
right?
So there's all sorts of things that go into it as far as drafting players in the CFL goes. It's not just who's the best player out there. You got to decide, well, do I need that guy at that position to be Canadian, and is he going to go to the NFL? And Kavis Reed this week talked about that first pick, and he said, whoever we take with that pick or whoever we get if we trade that pick, I want him to be an impact player. And they got a pretty good offensive lineman in the trade for the pick in Ryan Bomben. So, you know, it depends what your needs are, right? And teams need at certain positions, and you got to go after them. Like I anticipate the Eskimos possibly today drafting a defensive end, because I mentioned Kwaku Boateng is probably going to be a starter. So once you go Canadian to that position, you got to have a backup for him, right? Just like last year, that's why they drafted Christophe Malumba-Chimanga, because they knew they were going Canadian at that linebacker spot. They probably said, we won't need him because we got two guys ahead of him, but everybody at that spot got injured. He ended up starting 9 games for the Eskimos last year. So yeah, it's all
about
positions.
Look at this one, Morley. After video review, if Jenny Malkin has scored, and they waved it off of the ice, and upon review, that's over the line.
Looks like a goal to me.
The puck was lying on the goal line. Braden Holtby was on his belly facing the net. His head is in the net, so he totally got pushed around, and he just was doing a snow angel. Malkin came in from the side and poked at the puck. And and then
Smith Pelly comes in and pulls his hand out of the net, thinking the puck's under.
It was in twice then, because it was in on Malkin's first shot, and then I think it flipped over the line afterwards as well. So the Penguins go up 2-1 on the Capitals, 2:29 left in the second period. Well, now we got another challenge. No, well, we got the sound down. I wonder now if there's a challenge for goalie interference. There usually is.
They're looking for pass interference.
Once we're done the tenth video review, we'll tell you if this is actually a goal or not.
Dave CFL Camp- game's broken out here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly. That's Morley Scott. Dave Campbell's going to step in, and we have Stephanie Labbe with that crazy story with her not being allowed to play on a men's soccer team. That's all coming up inside sports on Jed.
Hi, this is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins from your Edmonton Oilers. You're listening to Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins on Oilers Radio 630 CHED.
All right, so the Nuge and Team Canada, McDavid and Nurse as well. United States tomorrow, World Championship starting in Denmark. We'll keep an eye on that one. The Penguins do lead the Capitals 2-1. So as Morley and I were discussing, they were reviewing it for the puck being across the line. Dave Campbell joining us here as well. We're live at Commonwealth Stadium. We're waiting for the Eskimos, who will probably be in about 15 minutes, be making the 10th overall pick in the CFL draft. Video review for goal line technology, I'm in favor of. That was one of those scramble plays, bodies flying around. The puck was over the line for maybe a tenth of a second, but it was over the line.
Yeah, you're right.
And then the Capitals challenged for goalie interference. I thought that was, that was a Hail Mary challenge.
Well, me too.
I thought the player was kind of, I think it was Hornquist, sort of dove for a puck and kind of brushed Holtby, but Holtby's reaching for it, and a Capitals defenseman is diving in there as well. So that's one of those where it delays the game, and I think that's why. Well, there are a lot of reasons people don't like the goalie interference challenge.
No, and I know a lot of people say, well, get rid of, video review. It's never going to happen because there's too many people involved that are, coaches and GMs that want it. But they have to find a way to make it better. I agree with you. I think it's time to look at the goal line technology. And I am glad, though, that the challenge did not last long. It maybe lasted about a minute,
yeah, that's
and a half,
true. They didn't drag it on. Because I always thought the longer they reviewed it, that they were looking for something. They were determined to find goalie interference.
Yep.
We want to look at it, or there was a challenge, so we better make sure we find something, especially if it was a Booth-initiated one in the final minute of the third or overtime. So anyway, that happened quickly. This is a good game. Penguins and Capitals 2-1, last minute of the second period now. Pens are hoping to tie up the series here on home ice. I mentioned the Raptors getting just crushed in the second half by Cleveland, 128-110.
Unreal. They could get swept now. I could see it happening. For some reason, Mount LeBron is just too big of a hill to climb. And he's a good basketball player. The Cleveland Cavaliers are a good team, but they shouldn't be better than the Toronto Raptors, who have much better depth. They have a much better bench. They got two all-star players in Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. And for some reason, it just never happens. And I think a lot of it is mental. A lot of it is, I think there's still some immaturity on that club. And really, throughout the regular season, Dwayne Casey, the head coach, did a great job of keeping this team even keeled. And yeah, we won, and we won our 50th win, and we've won 11 straight, or we've won best home record in the league. Doesn't matter. We got more goals to accomplish. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like, unless they find a way to play better on the road.
Yeah, I mean, that's, win 4 out of 5 now.
Yeah, against LeBron James? I don't think that's going to happen at all.
All right, Reed Wilkins, Dave Campbell, Inside Sports on 630 CHED. It is 6:53. We're live at Commonwealth Stadium. And where are we now, Dave?
We are pick. Eighth pick has just been announced.
The Stampeders are going to pick, then the Argos, then the Eskimos. So the Eskimos traded the 6th overall pick and the 37th for 10 and 20 from Hamilton. But how come the Eskimos aren't getting the 20th pick? What happened there?
It was all part of the deal made back in December when the Eskimos sent a third-round pick in James Franklin to the Toronto Argos for Mason Woods, an offensive lineman. I believe another pick was involved as well. But the Argos were guaranteed the Eskimos' best third-round selection.
Oh, okay.
So the Eskimos ended up trading that third-rounder, and then they got it back with the trades yesterday. So they got the 20th pick. So that automatically goes to the Argos.
Okay.
So they basically, what happened is they flip picks. So the Eskimos take the Argos pick at 24 in the third round, 24th overall, and the Argos take the Eskimos' 20th overall pick.
Okay, so that's what's going on there. So the Eskimos are getting close. You saw Mark Cordy got picked 4th.
That's great. And I'm shocked and pleasantly surprised that he got picked that high. I thought he would go perhaps in the late first round, early second round for sure. He's got a couple rookie minicamp tryouts in the NFL with the New York Jets and the New York Giants. Giants, I think, sign every Canadian prospect anyway to go to a minicamp. They mostly get released. But good for him. It's the philosophy of the Ottawa Redblacks. They draft O-lineman. They're going to get a good one. And he joins Ed Elnicki, the head coach trophy winner. He's back with the Ottawa Redblacks. So good for Mark Corday.
Yeah, that's a good point. Corday was blocking for Elnicki for the past few years. Helped Elnicki rush for all those yards. Get the heck Crichton. Now we could see that same combination in Ottawa.
And they're they're not adverse to starting a rookie at on their O-line. Justin Lauzon-Séguin a couple years ago was a first-round pick, and he started in the Grey Cup game.
Right.
So Corday has a chance.
All right. Dave, before we let you go, do you expect Morley was anticipating maybe a defensive end for the Eskimos? What position do you think they might target with the 10?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I'm looking more. There's a couple of defensive backs on the board. One is Godfrey Onyeka. Another one is, totally escaped me.
That's anyway, okay. Godfrey Onyeka Bennett, is a great name.
Bennett is his last
Bennett,
name.
Okay.
Yes. There are very athletic defensive backs, and I'm looking at the area of the Eskimos.
Maybe Bennett.
Jackson Bennett. There you go. Thank you. They want to maybe improve their depth at safety, perhaps. I could be totally wrong here. They do have Josh Woodman, and they also have Jordan Hoover, who they drafted last year. But a couple of guys that can really play well on special teams. Onyeka could be a possibility to back up at Will linebacker. That's right now that's being occupied by Adam Konar. So that's a spot I could see them trying to address. But they're in the mode right now. I think they don't have any glaring needs, so they can take best player available according to their list. And Brock Sunderland said we got over 10 guys. We graded, you know, at a first-round level. So we'll see what happens. It'll be very interesting.
All right. The Eskimos picks coming up in a few minutes. Stephanie Labbe, strange story. Made a men's soccer team and then was told she's not allowed to play. She's going to join us after the 7 o'clock news.
Chad Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 Chad.